Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
This is Dave Cornielsen with the Department of Missouri State University's Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science, bringing you the webcast version of STEM Spots. And once again, we have in the studio with us Dr. Kevin Mikas and Dr. Doug Guzet, who are both professors in the Department of Geography, Geology, and Planning at Missouri State University. Thanks very much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So if you heard the earlier version, you know that we're talking a little bit about earthquakes and seismic activity in Missouri, and we're going to follow up on that discussion and go into greater depth and detail, hopefully. And so, Kevin, if you could weigh in a little bit on some of the ideas that we fleshed out earlier, where we discussed the idea of seismic activity in the Boot Heel region of Missouri. So talk a little bit more about how substantial it is, how often it occurs, things like that.
Okay. We know there was some big earthquakes, 1811, 1812. Okay, and since then, since the 60s, the St. Louis University has put in a seismic network out there to determine where these earthquakes are, the depth and horizontal location. Then Memphis State University put in a more detailed seismic network, and now the USGS, United States Geological Survey, has put in instruments. So there's a lot of instruments out there. And based on all those, there's probably, I said earlier, 1 to 200 small events per year, ranging in magnitudes from 1 to 4. There hasn't been any ones much larger than 4 since the 1811, 1812 in the New Madrid area. There has been some just north of the New Madrid area in a place called the Wabash Seismic Zone along the Wabash River in between Illinois and Indiana. Is that right? Yeah. But those earthquakes are deep. They're not at the surface. There's no surface. Like in California, you go out there and you can see they have an earthquake out there. You can see the fault. You can see the movement. And the problem in the New Madrid is covered by, 5 kilometers of Mississippi River sediment. And the earthquakes are below that. Based on looking at the seismic records, most of them are between 10 and 15 kilometers down in the earth. So we can't go out there and look at the earthquakes. The only thing we have is these seismic records to see what's really going on.
So you mentioned that means that the earthquake is propagating through a different kind of substructure. Is that good, bad, or indifferent? I mean, it's a lot of sediment that's on top of where the actual active region is. Is that good for us, or does it matter?
Yeah, well, it's not really. If it's a big earthquake, what happens, loose sediment like that shakes more than hard rock. California is hard rock mostly, but yeah, this loose sediment, it amplifies the seismic wave, especially the surface wave, and that makes a lot of shaking. And so any structures that are in that sediment, not connected to bedrock, hard rock, are going to fall.
Okay.
Are going to crack.
And so you mentioned earlier when we discussed this in the radio version that they haven't been seeing a buildup of stress. So talk a little bit about that. How much stress has to build up if you were to quantify that? Is it the number of years that they expect between major earthquakes that's dictated by how long it takes for the stress to build up?
Yeah, from the GPS records, they're looking at motions of, some places zero. It's not moving at all. To like 1.5 millimeters per year. Given that type of motion, the stress buildup, it will take a minimum of 1,000 years for a new earth, for a magnitude 7 to build up, and for magnitude 8, it's 100,000 years. But we know from we can dig into make trenches, and we can see evidence of past earthquakes, and they seem every 500, 600 years. So there's something not right with the GPS records. They've only been recording since the 90s.
So we may be in a fairly stagnant period, but overall it could be a little bit different than that.
And actually they're seeing a little bit more stress, but I mean it's still not much in the Wabash seismic zone than the New Madrid. But it's still very small.
So, Doug, does this mean that there should be really any response at the building of structures with codes, with zoning or anything like that, or do they really not worry about it too much?
Well, that's always a challenge. It's tough for anyone in a place that has had a historic earthquake like New Madrid did, or even just the whole Boot Heel area, to say, well, we just won't worry about it. We won't build things. Politicians do want to be ahead usually of the game on this and sort of say we should be designing our buildings to withstand that. So that's the challenge, is how much effort do you put into that? How much of your economic input? Because these are expensive, more expensive types of building. Housing in California costs more than the rest of the country, partially because of the cost of building for earthquake resistance.
Do they do much as far as earthquake resistance for residential dwellings in California, or do they put most of it into civic and larger commercial kinds of buildings?
That's a great question. I don't know. I would guess dollar for dollar it probably is more in the commercial, but there is quite a bit of work put into residential too. You're required to, if you build a new house, you're required to use what's called shear walls, and they're essentially box wall segments. They're not just 2x4s, but they're like putting the lids on a cereal box. Everyone knows that if you open the cereal box top and bottom, you can collapse it and recycle it much easier than if the box is solid. And you can build basically that sort of a 2x4 structure for your wall units. And California does that now.
And so the pushback would be primarily against cost. And so presumably contractors or people that were bidding jobs, if they had to add those kinds of changes into their construction techniques, it would drive the cost up at some level.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of pushback on that. I think probably there's a lot of pushback from government entities, because it's usually your larger public things, your jail, your city courthouse or municipal buildings, fire departments, hospitals, schools are all required usually in an area to meet what is known as the U.S. Geological Survey's estimated maximum ground motion. And that has been, there's plenty of documented studies that can run into the billions of dollars per state if you're in an area that suddenly has a higher risk.
Well, plus also they got to do infrastructure too, like especially highways, overpasses, bridges. They have to do special things, make them so they won't collapse.
Right.
And they're doing that in California.
Yeah. And in New Madrid, it affects everybody in the U.S., because, or almost everyone, I should say, because most of the natural gas lines and oil pipelines that come up from the Gulf of Mexico and New Orleans area go roughly right through that part of the Mississippi River Valley.
And so is the engineering design of those kinds of pipelines take this into account?
Most of them, I think, have somewhat, but that's if there are new estimates of the ground motion, then there will be new requirements for the pipelines to do better isolation of, better buffering of the pipeline from that kind of ground motion.
And how about earthquakes and other kind of seismic activity except for the southeast portion? Is Missouri in a pretty good position as far as that, Kevin?
Yeah, as far as I know, there's hardly any earthquakes outside of the New Madrid. I mean, there's always occasionally a, like any place in the Midwest, there might be one or two small events, but there's none.
From a geological point of view, can you talk just a minute about what it is about the structure there where the Mississippi is down in the southeast portion that kind of gives rise to that?
That's a good question. one theory you hear a lot about, it's an old rift. Back in the Precambrian, let's say a billion years ago, or a little less than a billion years ago, that part of the Earth was pulling apart. So there's a lot of faults in there, a lot of fractures. And where you have fractures, old fractures, that's easier to break than solid rock. So, but that doesn't explain why there compared to other places. That's a big question now, what's going on. Some people say it's the stress of all the sediments being loaded on this fractured rock might be doing it. Or some people saying there used to be an ice cap come down from Canada into that part of the country. About the southern limit, but that paid a big load on the earth, made a big stress. Now it's gone. The earth slowly is releasing stresses due to that ice load.
Now,
but we don't know.
Would it be true that if there was a rift there or some sort of a break, would we be likely to have volcanic activity? Because there's no history of volcanic activity in that region.
Is
there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's old, but when that was rifting, yeah, there's volcanic. If anyone's been to Johnson Shuddin State Park, the St. Francis Mountain, Tomsock Mountain, those are all volcanic rocks.
What kind of volcanic rock would you see? I'm from a Flagstaff area, and in Flagstaff area you see a lot of cinder cones, straight cinder cones.
The cinder cones are gone, long, long gone. They erode real easily. What you're seeing is old rhyolite flows. You'll see some old basalts, but all the evidence of the main cone of the volcano has been long eroded away.
So this would have been back millions of
years ago. Yeah, 800 million years ago.
Certainly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very good. And does that have to do with the fact that there's so many hot springs and so forth in just the general area of southern Missouri? Does that have to do with the seismic activity at some level, or
no?
Not really.
No.
No. That's just because you don't see that kind of hot spring stuff very often. I mean, not everywhere in the U.S. do they have stuff like that.
Oh, hot springs in Missouri, but Arkansas has hot springs. Arkansas. Yeah, and that's due to groundwater flow deep in sedimentary rocks. It heats up and comes back up.
Okay, very good. So would you say, Doug, I mean, do you spend time with the various kinds of things you might do in engineering geology? Are you asked very often to weigh in on things like earthquake design or anything like that?
We don't do a lot of that here. We do get asked from time to time. People express concerns or questions. The Springfield area where we're based is a little bit sort of insulated from this. Actually, as we were just discussing, the St. Francis Mountains sort of are an area of igneous rock that actually it doesn't completely interrupt the sedimentary rocks that we live on from extending all the way over to the New Madrid area, but it largely does provide sort of a buffer. We're sort of in, it's not a rain shadow like people might think of in the mountains out west, but we're in the shadow that shockwaves in New Madrid would not go through the sediments around the New Madrid, around the St. Francis Mountains quite as strongly to this area of the state.
So we do have seismometers in the area, though, and they very rarely pick up much?
No, we don't. That's one problem. There were some. There was a big National Science Foundation project called EarthScope. They put seismometers on a two-year period on a 70-kilometer grid. They kind of marched across the country, started out west, and I can't remember how wide it was, 1,000 kilometers wide or whatever, marching across. And they were here a couple of years ago for 2 years. But other than that, there's no seismometers in this region. I can't remember where the closest one is. It used to be over in Rolla, but that one's moved. There's actually one in the St. Francis Mountains. Other than that, there's none around there. So we don't know. There might be, there probably not, but there could be really, really small activity here, magnitudes ones and twos, but it's not much. There's nothing big here.
Right. So, basically, what you're saying here is that as far as seismic activity goes, the western part of the state's in essentially pretty good shape compared to a lot of parts of the country. I know I lived up by the Grand Canyon, and the Grand Canyon, amazing enough, there's small threes and fours there all the time. Yeah. You wouldn't know that since you don't read about it in the paper very often, but if you lived there, you knew that that was happening. Mm-hmm. But in the western part of the state, not so much. Yeah. But the New Madrid area, it's conceivable that in the next 500 to 750 years, there could be a large earthquake there again.
Some people think, not everyone.
Oh, really? So there's actually debate as to whether it was almost an isolated event?
Yes. Well, I think it might be dying out, but that's the big argument. There's a lot of people fighting over this now in the seismology field.
So we talked about that a little bit earlier on the radio show of how they were estimating the fact that this would be a 7 point, what did you say, Doug?
Maybe a 7.8 or 7.7, something like that.
So they got information for perhaps oral and written accounts and damage estimates, but is there some way physically to look at the ground and estimate how large the earthquake was?
No.
From movement or anything like that?
Well, yeah, if there was faults, we could see offsets of faults, we might be able to get a better estimate, but there wasn't any.
Okay, because of the nature of the fact
that
this is
buried.
You can see it in the San Andreas out west,
right,
but not here.
Right. So essentially, the people that argue about how large this earthquake might have been are doing theoretical modeling, or?
Yeah, they're using this GPS data they've gotten lately, and they're doing theoretical modeling. Now, one problem in the New Madrid, you go on the United States Geological Survey website, you can see probability maps of how much ground motion will be. And a lot of that's based on having actual earthquakes happen in a region. And there's a certain type of seismometer they use for this called strong motion seismometers that looks at the wave particle motion right at the epicenter. And you need a magnitude 6 or 7 to get an estimate how much motion it would be from a magnitude that type of earthquake. And you can do that in California out west, but you can't do that in Missouri because they haven't happened.
So basically that gives them less data to input into their theoretical models.
That
means there must be a wide degree of variability in what the models would say then.
Yes, there was. That paper just came out in a journal called Seismological Research Letters, and showing all the different models that come out. Some of them say, wow, it's going to be a big one. Other one goes, yeah, it's not going to happen.
So does that help the community? That's very interesting to me, because one of the issues you see is scientists have actually come under assault by not predicting things adequately enough.
Yeah.
So do people get together and talk about what this might look like, the response from seismologists, and whether they're uniform or not?
Yes,
obviously, science can't have complete uniformity.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the local planners do that, but the seismologists do, and there's a lot of arguments.
Is it completely different modeling, or is it different input on parameters?
Different types of modeling and
so parameters. Both.
Yes, both.
Both.
Yeah.
Doug, if you were to think about the kinds of things people do when they build a home to make it be more reinforced against earthquakes, what do people mostly do?
Well, you know, it really varies. I mean, one of the other challenges for the engineering with the earthquakes and the uncertainty is buildings actually have a natural frequency, a natural resonance, it's called. Anybody who's done musical instruments knows that if you put a string at a certain length, it will vibrate at a certain pitch. Buildings do the same thing, as do earthquakes, the ground motion and the shock wave traveling out. And so usually near the center, the epicenter, the actual occurrence of the earthquake, you'll get high frequency motion, which damages typically shorter buildings. Farther away, you get low frequency. That's why everyone usually thinks of an earthquake from the movies as that low rumbling sound. And so you actually do more swaying and more resonance with taller buildings. Most people have actually experienced this if you've been sitting at a stoplight and you hear the bass thumper on someone else's car coming from a block away. That's the low frequencies that you can hear farther distances. Those tend to affect taller buildings. So if another quake were to hit the New Madrid area, right around New Madrid, which is mostly shorter buildings, homes and small one- and two-story old town square, probably would receive significant damage. But farther away, Memphis or especially even St. Louis, skyscrapers might be the ones most affected. And
that's
so you really have to tailor your building to what the hazards you think are.
Is it just the lateral distance, or this whole idea that the actual epicenter is buried down? How many kilometers down did you say it might be, Kevin?
10 or 15.
So does that affect it also, the fact that it's so much further
down? Yes, the straight line
in?
Distance from the
event
mm-hmm. to the site.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, that's why the USGS will put out hazard maps based on frequency. They'll have one map for long periods and one for short periods, one for shorter buildings, one for taller buildings.
Very interesting. Where can you find information like that on the U.S.?
Yeah, you just go to United States Geological Survey, USGS.gov, and just go to hazards, and there's earthquakes.
Very interesting. So people that were in the construction trades, if they were in a region that they thought was heavy in earthquakes, they would be looking at material like that.
Yeah,
you bet.
Very interesting. Well, that's very interesting information. I really appreciate you coming by and talking about it. And this has been Dr. Kevin Mikus and Dr. Doug Guzet from the Department of Geography, Geology, and Planning at Missouri State University. And I'm Dave Cornelison from the Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Material Science at Missouri State University. And you have been listening to the webcast version of STEM Spots. Listen in again next week. Thanks.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.